Where'd you find this?
Craig's here.
Welcome, Craig.
Hey, guys. Happy happy Friday.
Yes, sir. Right.
It's Friday.
It's Daddy's weekend, and where are your daddies this weekend?
Here we go.
It's Daddy's weekend, but Friday is always ladies' night.
Oh, I love that. All right. I love when I can just tell what the title of the episode is going to be right away, and I don't have to figure it out later. So here on Ladies' Night, episode 86, I'm Tony. Ryan, how you doing, man?
Doing good.
Hell yeah. Shane, how are you doing?
Doing well in a rookie draft right now, so I'm bricked up over Anthony Richardson yet again.
Again. Craig, how are you? All right.
Craig says he's fine, and he's not gay.
No. You missed. There was a whole discourse about Italians. Never mind. All right. So let's talk. Let's talk 86s. I have one this week. Ryan, do you have multiple?
Yeah, I got a couple. But
my
they're nothing long.
Okay. Let's have you start then.
Yeah. I don't like talking about the Packers in the present, but I can talk about Packers from the past. Let's talk about Mr. Boyd Dowler. All right. Wide receiver for the Packers in the 60s, and everyone knows, the Packers were dominant in the 60s.
True.
He was the 25th overall pick in the 1959 draft. He also won NFL Rookie of the Year that year. That was also Vince Lombardi's first season as head coach.
Okay.
So he worked with Lombardi through the infancy of Lombardi's coaching career. Was a two-time Pro Bowler, 65, 67. Assisted the Packers, five NFL championship wins, and they won Super Bowls 1 and 2.
Why are Midwesterners so, upset when they just have, decades of domination? It's like, yo, you got sports greats up there. I know, yeah, it's cold, but, enjoy it.
Because they're afraid, because not corn-fed Midwestern white boys are winning every championship in every sport, and they feel threatened.
They're called lunch pail boys.
scrappy gym rats.
In Super Bowl II, Dowler made a huge play, a 62-yard touchdown from quarterback Bart Starr. Okay. Obviously, they won that game.
What a great name.
Two receptions for 71 yards, touchdown. He played 11 seasons with the Packers and retired in Washington. He played one last year in Washington before he decided to call it quits.
Okay.
He retired with a career record of 474 receptions for 7,270 yards and 40 touchdowns.
Damn.
He also led the Packers in receptions 7 seasons during the 60s. And after he was done, he spent 30 years working as assistant coach and a scout in the NFL. Notable position Dowler held included the passing game coordinator role for the Philadelphia Eagles from 73 to 75. Okay. And then he was a scout for the Falcons, and he retired in 2007.
Whoa. A dude that played in Super Bowl 1 and 2 retiring in 2007. That's nuts.
And he's still alive, so still kicking it.
Fucker.
Unkillable.
Fuck the Packers. Fuck the Packers.
Hey,
Mr. Boyd Dowler.
At least you know all that cheese and high sodium meat will keep you alive for as long as possible.
Yeah. All the salted meat.
Yeah.
Actually, do you mind if I go next? Because I have a Packers one too.
Holy shit, dude. It's all connected. Absolutely.
All right, cool. So I try pretty hard to not make my Bears homerism super obvious on the podcast, because nobody really is dying for it. And because usually it's only interesting to me and Ryan, and also to my mom, who still won't forgive me for choosing to cover the Packers over the Bears for our team previews. I love you, Mom. Please call me back. So
that's an indictment on me though, because I didn't want to take the Chargers for that person. So like, I'll jump on that grenade for you to be like, hey, listen, we're not doing homerisms together. So Shane is at fault for that one.
So I'm going to talk today about something that like some older Bears fans, like our parents' generation, are know well, but it's not usually common knowledge outside this area. So we're going to talk today about November 23rd, 1986, and the play that effectively ended the 80s Bears dynasty before it even started. So before we do that, we got to talk 86 Bears. Obviously, in 85, they won the Super Bowl. They had one of the greatest seasons in NFL history. So they started in 86 with the expectation to whoop ass again.
Yeah.
The Bears started the season 10-2. In those first 12 games, they only gave up 20 or more points three times, which is gnarly. So they were still killing it, right? So we've got the 86 Bears crushing it. Let's talk about this guy named Charles Martin. Charles Martin was a journeyman linebacker who started in the USFL, played in the CFL, and then joined the Packers in 84. So 1 year USFL, 1 year CFL, Green Bay. So 86 will be his second year as a Packer, and we're like almost, you know, to the end of the season. So Bears fans and Packers fans have always hated each other. And in today's game, it's still kind of stupid because like players are constantly changing teams. Nobody's from the area, so who the fuck cares? But in the 80s, when the Bears played the Packers, there were some fucking bloodbaths, all right? So in 85, the Bears, the first time they ran defensive tackle / fullback William Perry into the end zone was against Green Bay, something the Packers thought was obviously and correctly in poor sportsmanship. So when they met later in the season, Green Bay committed 3 personal fouls in the first quarter and 4 total for the game, while the Bears committed 2. So this was a rivalry in the truest sense of the word. So we're in the next year after this like almost melee. And so Jim McMahon's the Bears quarterback. He's playing through a partially torn rotator cuff that kept him out a couple games earlier that year. But the thing about Jim McMahon is his thing was like, yo, I'm super injured, but I'm going to play through it. So he gets the green light because it's still the 80s and you could play with pretty much anything.
Yeah, a bump of coke and some Toradol, you're fine.
Oh, yeah. So Charles Martin and the Packers come out of the tunnel, and Martin has a towel, like a hand towel, on his hanging from his pants. And on his towel had the numbers 9, 34, 83, 63, and 29 written on an impermanent marker. Now, this might look like a hit list, but if you ask Martin about it, it was a hit list. He said that.
It's just social. He was going to forget it.
So McMahon throws a pass. It's intercepted. And as he, during the return, which is still like 15 yards down the field, Martin comes up from behind, wraps McMahon's throwing arm, and then lifts and slams him to the turf. It's like a straight up side suplex. And McMahon lands directly on his injured shoulder. So this is like nowhere near the play. So there's no logical argument that Martin did what he did to assist the defensive back in the return. Referee Jerry Markbright, who I've already mentioned, is a family friend and was also the referee of record during the Holy Roller play, which Shane did a few weeks ago.
Might have been a few months ago.
Yeah, it's true. He throws the flag. And then another former podcast subject, Jimbo Covert, runs in and decks Martin, and shit hits the fan.
Hell yeah.
According to Markbright, he told Charles Martin, "You're out of the game. You have to leave immediately." Martin said, "I'm not going anywhere with you." According to legend, Markbright said, "If you don't, I'll let the Bears take care of you," which was enough to get him to leave the field. Mike Ditka had to be restrained from physically assaulting a Green Bay player on the field, which is that's pretty standard Ditka. Packers coaches tried to defend Martin, saying he was taught to block anyone near him on an interception return, but obviously a hit list. It's away from that side of the field. Whatever. So this hit changes the trajectory of the 80s Bears since McMahon goes out for the rest of the season. Now, this defense allowed less points than the 85 team, like the greatest defense of all time team. And the lack of offense, however, would lead to a playoff defeat against Washington. McMahon ends up coming back, but even according to him, his shoulder was never the same again. So this hit changes precedent for the NFL because Martin's ejection and following two-game suspension was the first time that the league explicitly said a violent act not considered a part of the game is grounds for ejection. And this is also the first multi-game suspension for an on-field incident in modern NFL history.
Really?
Yep. So that is Charles Martin, Jim McMahon, the end of the Bears dynasty before it started. I would like to also say Charles Martin hilariously threw an egg at scab players when they tried to scab in 87, which we'll talk about next week. That's my 87. Passed away at the age of 45. And Jim McMahon won a Super Bowl as the backup quarterback to Brett Favre and the Packers. And when they went to the White House to meet Bill Clinton, Jim McMahon wore his Bears jersey.
Excellent.
That's my 86.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
Maniac. All right. So I'm inspired by you guys. So I'm going to kind of rip Shane. Off of you guys. Yeah, of course. So we've spent a lot of time together. So I'd like to honor you guys in a way. So I'm ripping off the special teams because you did special teams last week, Tony. And again, I'm going to kind of bend the rules because this guy kicks ass and should be talked about. So my 86 is Mel Gray. Mel Gray never wore 86. He was never drafted in 86, but he did enter the NFL in 86.
Counts.
Yeah.
So in high school, Gray was known for his speed. He was named All-Peninsula District Track Team in Williamsburg, Virginia for his 200-meter dash and tying his school record for the 100-meter dash at age 15. So Gray went the unconventional method for the people we talk about in this show. And he went to a junior college at Coffeyville Community College, where he shared the backfield his freshman year with future Pro Bowler Mike Rozier, R-O-Z-I-E-R. Yeah.
Atlanta.
Okay. In his sophomore season, Gray became the future back, racking up 1,397 yards with 20 touchdowns, being the leading scorer in junior college and third in rushing, being named All-American. So After he completed community college, he decided to go to Purdue, where his presence caused top two running backs to actually be moved to different positions so Gray could be the lead back, which I think is like one of the hardest flexes you could ever have.
Yep.
So in his 2 years at Purdue, he rushed for 1,000 yards each season, and he was named second team All Big Ten, which like seems so niche when you break it down.
Yes.
So in 84, Gray would be selected in the 7th round to the Chicago Blitz of the USFL, where he would be immediately moved to wide receiver and then traded to the LA Express. In the divisional game of his first season, Gray scored the game-winning touchdown in the divisional game against the Michigan Panthers, breaking his arm in the process. So the game lasted for over 4 hours, as it had 3 overtimes and was the longest Pro Bowl football game in football history at the time.
Sick.
Dog.
Hell yeah.
And thanks to resident dumbfuck Donald Trump, the USFL folded. Gray would join the Saints, where he would play three seasons as a special teamer. I'm just kind of not. I'm gonna stat dump here just because it's a lot to consume and it's all together. Hell yeah. So after he was in New Orleans, Gray would enter where he would gain notoriety, Detroit, playing from 89 to 94 alongside all-time great Barry Sanders. So during his 84-game tenure in Detroit, during his 84-game tenure in Detroit, he returned 216 kickoffs for 5,478 yards, a 25.4 average, and 5 touchdowns. Yeah.
Woo. Holy shit.
He would also return 132 punts for 1,427 yards with a 10.8 average and 2 touchdowns. So he's the franchise leader for return yards, return touchdowns, returned touchdowns in a season 3, highest kickoff return average in a season and total return punt yards.
To this day, he's still the franchise
in Detroit. Leader? Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So his 7 total touchdown returns is 3rd all time in team history. And he was selected the Pro Bowl 4 times in his time. And he was named All Pro 90 through 94.
Wow.
And unfortunately, my Chicago homies, his longest run did occur against the Bears with 102 yards, where he would also have 98 and 91 yard returns for touchdowns that year. So he would play for the Oilers in 95 and 96. In 96, he ran roughshod over the Bengals, where he returned 5 kickoffs for 177 yards, 3 punts for 86 yards, for a total of 263 total yards, tying Billy White Shoes Johnson for the franchise record, who you referenced last week.
Last week, Billy White Shoes Johnson.
So after returning for 12 seasons, he was ranked 5th as one of the greatest returners in the NFL top return aces. He holds the record for being the first, second, and third oldest player to return a kickoff for a touchdown at 33 years, 276 days, 33 years, 235 days, and 33 years, 221 days. 4 All-Pros, 4 Pro Bowls, kickoff return leader 91, 90s All-Decade Team, Lions 75th Anniversary Team, and all-time team for the Lions. Whew. So Gray eventually stopped playing football. He would go on to finish his degree after retiring to become a substitute teacher before he became a real estate in Houston.
Wow. Damn. Hell yeah. I love the USFL. This dude's got, like, aside from how he got into the league, it sounds like the way he was treated, moved around positions, very like Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah. I just like learning about guys who, like, didn't have, like, they weren't a 5-star recruit. They didn't have the easy route. They're just like, hey, it's what I'm good at. And check me out.
Right. And also, man, I got to say, like, football's really trying to, like, get rid of kickoffs. Can we just, like, focus on making them safer and, like, keep them in? Because kickoffs fucking rule.
Yeah, because anything could happen.
Kickoff returns are badass. Just do what the XFL does. Have them line up fucking 10 yards from each other. Kick it from the 30. I want to see some fucking runbacks, bro.
Let me get Deuce Vaughn in there.
I'm saying. All right, Ryan, you got one more? Take us home.
Yeah. I want to talk about someone who had careers in the NFL, but also the CFL.
Oh, here we go.
Someone who is not in the NFL Hall of Fame, but in the Canadian Football League Hall of Fame.
God damn, yes.
All right. Let's talk about Mervin Fernandez. Swervin' Mervin.
Swervin' Mervin. Okay, let's go.
Yeah. Born in 1959. He was a standout wide receiver in high school, where he picked up his famous nickname from the team's quarterback. They just named him Swervin' Mervin because he was good.
Oh, I thought it was because he, like, drove drunk a whole bunch or something.
It's a skill, okay.
But following high school, Fernandez played at junior college in Cupertino, California, before finishing his college career at nearby San Jose State.
Okay.
It was at San Jose State that the LA Raiders staff members took notice of the 6'3", 205-pound speedy wide receiver, and the Raiders eventually made Fernandez their 10th-round pick in the 83 NFL draft. But he'd ended up going to play for the CFL. He played 6 years for the BC Lions.
Okay.
He joined them in 1982, made an immediate impact, finishing his rookie season with over 1,000 yards and helping his team to a 9-7 record. They won the CFL Western Division. He won an Outstanding Rookie Award. After his 2,000-yard seasons, Fernandez was a key component in the BC Lions Grey Cup Championship season of 85. He finished the season with 95 catches for 1,727 yards.
Damn.
And 18.2 yard perception average.
Wow.
Along with 15 touchdowns.
Hell yeah.
What a monster.
You know, I'm going up. Not this next week, but the week after, we're going up to Hamilton to go see Katie's family, and the Canadian Football Hall of Fame is in Hamilton.
Go Ticats.
You can see this guy's name there. He was inducted into the CFL Hall of Fame in 2019. So
let's go.
He's a member of the BC Lions all-time dream team, the 50th year anniversary team. He was voted one of the CFL's top 50 players in 2006. But after that, okay, so he played from 82 to 86 in the CFL.
Okay.
He then went on to play with the LA Raiders who, as I mentioned before, drafted his rights in 1983. During that span, he played 86 games and amassed 209 catches for 3,764 yards and 19 touchdowns. He never made the Pro Bowl, but he did leave his mark on the Raiders' record books. His 209 career catches are 10th most by any wide receiver in Raiders history. His 3,764 career receiving yards rank him number 8 all-time for the Raiders. And his 18.01 average yards per catch for his career is first among any receiver to wear the Raiders silver and black jersey.
Damn.
And so, wait. So, hang on. Here's something that I've been thinking about. He's all these things in Canadian football, and he only played there for like 4 years?
I think 5 seasons, maybe, but yeah.
He's like the greatest. He's on the greatest wall of fame for all. It's like, bro, that was 5 years.
Right. In 1988, he led all NFL receivers in average yards per catch. Guess how much it was? 26 exactly.
Nice, nailed it.
His finest year with the Raiders was in 1989. He made 57 catches for 1,069 yards and 9 touchdowns, leading all Raiders receivers in almost every major category, and becoming only the 6th Raider to gain over 1,000 yards in a season.
Damn.
And like I said, he's in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. He's now a sales representative and avid sports fisherman.
There you go. There you go, Ryan.
We got to give him the lead with Herbert, dude. Let's get this shit going.
His son actually tried out for the Seattle Seahawks in 2007, but didn't make the final roster.
Magic's gone.
Yep. But that's a famous number 86 who I really knew nothing about. And has all these Raiders records, Mr. Mervin, Swervin' Mervin Fernandez.
Love it.
Damn. You know, actually, when you get inducted into the CFL Hall of Fame, you don't get a gold jacket. You get a Rush 82 Tour t-shirt.
And you get Tim Hortons for life.
Oh, free. For sure. Timbits, like, they'll just drop them off to your house. You don't even need to DoorDash it. All right, so those are our 86s. We're going to come back. We're going to do fun teams this week. So catch us on the other side. And goodbye. Hey, friends. Tony from TH Fantasy here with a quick programming note. Just to remind you, what we're going to be doing going forward is we're going to be splitting the summer research episodes up into 2 smaller bits
for your listening enjoyment,
because I don't know how many people have time to listen to 2 hours of football talk in their lives, not to mention just in one sitting. So what we'll be doing is we'll do our number of the week in our first episode, and our second episode will be the last 2 of our 3 team reviews for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoy. We put together a ton of research on them, and if you have anything you want to add or tell us that we're wrong about, please reach out. Just make sure you are subscribing and giving us money, because that's really important. Thanks. We're back. Hey, before you start, I want to just say something that you cannot. I'm finally going to be right on this. You ready? It's a Kadarius Toney week. First time all year.
If you say it every week, you can't be wrong, because eventually you will be right. Right? That's how that works.
Last year, I started breaking it down like there's a Kadarius Toney watch or a Kadarius Toney warning. He's here. He's on your front steps today. Ryan is going to talk us through the Kansas City Chiefs. Ryan, tell me about last year's Super Bowl winners.
Oh, my God. All right. So we're not going to spend too much time on the coaching staff. We all know Andy Reid is God. Really quick, Andy Reid has, what, this is his 10th or 11th season?
In Kansas City, yeah, something like that.
Head coach in Kansas City. Get this. Kansas City, since 2013, has only won fewer than 10 regular season games on one occasion.
Dude, that's dominance.
Yep. Oof. So, Andy Reid is a god. We won't spend too much time.
Yeah.
Let's get down to the facts. Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are amazing together.
That's it.
That's what's going to happen again. It's outside of a horrendous injury, which will be really bad for this team because you know who's backing up? You know who's backing up Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, it's
Blaine Gabbert.
Yo, Gabba Gabbert. Let's go.
They did get that. What's that rookie quarterback, Chris Olodokun?
Yeah, someone I didn't even watch. Yeah,
signed Taylor Heineke. get him a ring.
They've got some other guy named Shane Bouchel. I don't know. But we need Patrick Mahomes to stay healthy this year. Otherwise, it's going to be all in the run game with Isaiah Pacheco and Jerick McKinnon and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Is LaMichael Perine Samaje Perine's brother?
I don't know.
So we've got a lot of blah with the receivers that Mahomes is going to be targeting this year. We got MVS. We got Kadarius Toney. We got Sky Moore. We got someone who I really like, Rashee Rice. He actually kind of looks like Tyreek Hill, but I don't know if it's much of a comparison because he's a little taller. Rashee Rice is like 6'2 or 6'3.
Isn't he just like a Juju clone?
Smaller.
He is like a Juju clone, but I think he's going to play on the outside, right?
Most likely. And then they picked up Richie James from the New York Giants. They picked up Smith Marsette, who was with the Vikings last year, who was supposed to be someone but never really translated because obviously they had Thielen and Jefferson. And
we owe, as Bears fans, we owe a debt of gratitude to Ishmael Smith Marsette because last year when the Bears played the Vikings in the fourth quarter, the Bears were down and Justin ripped off like a 70-yard touchdown run that got called back because Ishmael Smith Marsette held on the play and he didn't fucking need to. So thank you. DJ Moore is here partially in a butterfly effect way because Ish Marsette can't fucking block.
Right. Really quick, we'll look at who they drafted. Obviously, it was a lot of defensive players. They really don't need to worry about their offense right now. Round one, pick 31, they got Felix Anudike. Ozama, defensive end from Kansas State. Round two, pick 55, they picked up Rashee Rice. He had some impressive numbers at SMU last year. It was like over 1,300 yards, and it was over 10 touchdowns, I think. So we'll see what happens with him. Round three, number 92, they picked up Wanya Morris, offensive tackle, to help on that line for Mahomes. And then their last four picks were all defense. Round four, they got a safety, Chamari Connor. Round five, they got linebacker B.J. Thompson. Round six, they got defensive tackle Keandre Coburn. And round seven, they picked up Nick Jones, a cornerback. So they did some padding on their defense because obviously
they need it.
Yeah. Those teams operate like a sieve. There's a reason that a lot of those games go 35-28 or something like that.
Right.
Interestingly enough, Patrick Mahomes had one of his best years last year after losing Tyreek Hill.
You guys were on that though, weren't you? Before the season started, you're like, they're just going to spread the ball around and the efficiency is going to go through the roof.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes actually last year set the fourth highest record for passing yards, 5,250. Only behind Peyton Manning's great season. We all remember that when he threw seven touchdowns in a game, 2013. He threw for 5,477 yards. Also behind Drew Brees from 2011 and Tom Brady from 2021. And then Tom Brady was just behind that with his other season from the Patriots. But one record that Patrick Mahomes did set number one last year was all-purpose yards. So rushing and passing combined, he set the NFL historic record of 5,614 yards.
God damn.
So what this is telling me is that it doesn't matter who's going to be receiver. Patrick Mahomes is gonna make you, you know. This is going to be another historic season, I feel. I don't know how much longer Kelsey's going to play, but if he keeps playing like this, he could play another few years.
I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago. I think Kelsey's up for a bunch of... It might have been when Ryan covered somebody that Kelsey's...
No, it was the... It was the Jerry Rice episode, and it's because it's all playoff records.
Yes. Right. So like Kelsey's in line to like just be fed the ball again this year because they're like, hey, bro, you're one of the best of all time. We're just going to make sure you shatter these records.
Right. Yeah. And Ryan, I have a fun Kelsey stat for you. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Okay. So he hasn't been below tight end 2 in fantasy points per game since 2015.
Really?
Last year he scored 316 fantasy points, which was over 100 more fantasy points than tight end 2.
God damn.
Oh my God.
He scored more fantasy points than Derrick Henry and scored less than 0.5 point behind Stephon Diggs.
Jesus.
Did he have like a 33% target share on his team too?
Yeah, it was stupid.
Also last year he set the third best, tight end record for receptions at 110, only behind Zach Ertz and Jason Witten.
Not surprised.
Another fact about Kelsey too is last year was not his best year in terms of receiving yards. He only had 1,338 yards. Oh my. Now, after last year, Kelsey now owns 3 of the top 5 tight end seasons in terms of passing yards. He has number one from 2020 where he had 1,416. Behind that is George Kittle in 2018, Mark Andrews in 2021. And then he has both records 4 and 5. Four is from last season and 2018 was number 5.
Good God.
Only good things are gonna happen with the Chiefs this year. And they're definitely going to make another Super Bowl run outside of horrible, horrible things that could potentially happen.
Dude, Mahomes is just made as titanium, though. He always gets hurt, and they're just like, juice him up, bro. That dude's ankle went sideways. You're playing next week. We're going to win this ring.
Yep.
Right.
So here's something I found weird. They lost both offensive tackles. So they brought in the left tackle from Tampa Bay, Donovan Smith, to play the left side, and then they brought in Jawan Taylor from Jacksonville on the right side. So they brought in 2 new starters. So I'm not huge on PFF stats because I don't really know what goes into them. But I will say this: Donovan Smith, their left tackle, was 78th out of 79 tackles in run blocking last year, and Jawan Taylor, statistically, you would think that he would be better, but guess what? He was the 79th out of 79 qualifying tackles for run blocking last year.
Which That's crazy. Is weird because I was looking at Mahomes' stats today too, and he was the number 2 overall pressured quarterback in football with the number 7 of danger plays. So they might have that 2021 O-line issue. You know what I mean? Where like, hey, like when they lost to the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. They don't develop linemen like the Eagles do.
No. And then plus two, I think I was reading like Kelsey's stats. He has like one of the lowest ADOTs for the position, but he has like the highest yak. So yes. Like, I mean, I guess pressure doesn't really make a difference when you can just sit there and get the ball out in 2 seconds and Kelsey's going to run chunk up 22 yards every play. So, I mean, whatever, right?
Ryan, what do you think about Isaiah Pacheco?
In that scheme, he's a good gadget player for that scheme because they're passing all the time. He did all right last year. I'm not going to be heavy on him in redraft league just because of how pass heavy that offense is.
That's a great decision.
Yeah.
Shane, what do you think? Are you the same?
Yeah, honestly, after doing more research in that backfield, I think I only want McKinnon. And McKinnon only in like the 11th round, because yeah, if you look
McKinnon,
at like
McKinnon was boss last year.
And because like he was scoring touchdowns on like third down conversions, and he was just catching. Yeah. He had like 55 catches last year, where if the target share is going to be, or the snap share is going to be 33% across the board, and you're giving me in PPR 1 point per every attempt. And I think he had the number one highest overall point per attempt in the running back position at like 1.54. Yep. So, I mean, that's just like super efficient, where he's not going to be a starter for you, but like, if you got to flex him a couple weeks and you want 10 points, I think he's a really great play in the 10th or 11th round compared to spending a 7th rounder on Pacheco, which like,
true.
I think I was looking at Pacheco stats and he was like 25th or something, or lower in red zone touches, because yeah. Travis Kelce is the number one red zone target in all of tight ends. So it's,
yeah.
if they're within 10 yards, it's going to Kelce.
Yeah.
Or it's a busted play with McKinnon.
Some last minute stats on Mahomes and Kelce before we go over their schedule. Mahomes finished in the top 5 for passing yards, as I said earlier, in a season. He was the 3rd player to throw for 5,000 yards in multiple seasons, and the 2nd player to throw for 5,000 yards and rush for more than 300 yards in a season.
Yep.
And I think like only like 2 of those were designed run plays. The rest were scrambles, which is like,
he's a scrambler. Same. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't do designs.
I want to clip that so bad.
This is a tight end record. Did you know that Travis Kelce has 7 straight consecutive seasons of over 1,000 yards?
Not surprised.
That's ridiculous.
Tony, can you give us your hot take on Travis Kelce that we discussed earlier in the week?
I think you should. If it was me, Tony, what is your number one redraft big board look like this year? Justin Jefferson, 1st overall. Travis Kelce, 2nd overall.
Really?
I'd take him over CMC. I know that's unpopular, but like, if you're giving me 100 points over the 2nd best player at that position, I don't fucking care if it's kicker. 100 points?
And you have more points than Stephon Diggs, right? Like,
who's right.
Wide receiver, what, 5, 6?
5, yep.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, that's my take. Travis Kelce, 102 in redraft. I don't give a fuck.
That's just the episode title.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
So let's run over their schedule really quick. Based on projections I'm seeing out there, Kansas City has around the 14th, 15th, or 16th hardest schedule. So they made away good when they were making the schedules this year. I thought they might have given them a little bit tougher of a schedule, but it's somewhere right in the middle. Let's start with week 1 against the Lions.
Dub.
We talked about that last week. That's probably going to be a win, but as Shane mentioned, I think last week, that's going to be a barn burner. Like, that's going to be back and forth. Hopefully, that'll be a really good game.
Let's get that 2019 game again with the Rams against the Chiefs. 90 yeah. points. Fucking let's break fantasy, yeah. baby.
And that game is at home, too. So that's a Kansas City win. Let's go to week 2. They're in Jacksonville. That should be hopefully a close game too, but that'll be a win. Then week 3, they're playing the Bears in Arrowhead.
That's a win.
That's a win. Week 4, they go to Jet Stadium and face Aaron Rodgers. That's going to be a win, and that's actually Sunday Night Football.
Dude, okay. State Farm Special.
Okay.
Week 5, they go to Minnesota. That's an afternoon game. I don't know why that's an afternoon game, but it is.
Because the league wants Mahomes to win, and they know that Kirk Cousins is only good at 12 o'clock Central Time.
That's true. Our
tinfoil hats.
Mm-hmm. Week 6, back at Arrowhead, they face the Broncos. That's a win. Week 7, still at Arrowhead, Chargers come in and try to take on the Chiefs. That could be a close game, too.
It should be.
If Herbert comes back to earth and doesn't play like he did last year.
They play close. They play so. Yeah. So does Denver. Yeah. They play close with them.
As long as Gerald Everett doesn't fuck us again and Derwin James body slams Travis Kelce, we have a shot.
Oh my god.
Then week eight they go again. They go to Mile High and they play Broncos again. That's another win. Do we have a loss yet? I don't think we have a loss yet.
Nope.
Nope. They will lose one of these games.
Yeah.
It'll be fluky.
Yeah.
Week nine. Here's a potential loss, only because of travel. Week nine, they play the Dolphins, but it's the Germany game.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, also assuming Tua's brain still work by week nine.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
Tyreek Hill, wide receiver one.
It could be. Ooh. I mean, it could be.
No, it's not. We'll talk about it in my section.
All right. Tyreek Hill comes on defense and catches a pass from Mahomes.
He's going to come after my guy this week and try to fucking break the special teams record for returns.
week 10, they got a bye. Week 11, Monday Night Football will be a really good game. They're playing the Eagles Super Bowl matchup.
I think that's a loss.
You think?
I'm doing it.
It's in Arrowhead.
I'm doing it.
Week 12. They go to Vegas and play the Raiders. That's a win.
Blowout.
Yeah.
Week 13, they go to Lambeau and play the Packers.
That's, 50 point win.
That's a win. Exciting week 14, afternoon game. They're playing the Bills at Arrowhead.
I'm giving them another L.
Playoffs matter, baby.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. 15, they go to Boston. They play the Patriots.
I'm kidding.
16, they're back at Arrowhead and playing the Raiders. That's another win.
By 50 or 60, for sure.
Yeah. Another really exciting game, another potential loss. Week 17, afternoon game. That's actually New Year's Eve. They play the Bengals.
Okay. I can see it.
Yeah. And then they round out the year in L.A. against the Chargers.
I'm feeling at worst 11-6. 11-6 if things don't go right, but I can see 13.
Yeah, I have them at 13-4 this year. So,
which is ironic because my dad and I are talking about that lunch. He's like, dude, the AFC sucks because you can go 11-6 and not make the playoffs.
Yeah. Yep. So... Ryan, I do have something I want to talk about.
Okay.
About the Chiefs. And I haven't shared this with anyone yet. So I want to talk about just overall. All right. Chiefs overall. So I've been doing a ton of research and looking at everything. And the thing that told me the most about the Chiefs this year is something I found when I was looking up Arizona stuff. So really? Uh-huh.
Their team is red.
So one of the biggest critiques of new Cardinals coach Jonathan Gannon, who was the defensive coordinator for Philly, was that his defense made no adjustments between the first and second half in the Super Bowl.
Yep, that's why Philly lost.
And so they had a lead, and I read about this in The Athletic, and then I ended up looking it up, and Chiefs players have not been quiet about this. They're like, they gave us the same looks the whole game. So at halftime, they used that extra 7 minutes to talk about the one look they were getting and how to beat that one look over and over again.
Okay.
So if you recall, well, you probably don't because you were high out of your fucking mind on on painkillers, but Mahomes threw second half pass touchdowns to Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. That was the exact same play, just flipped to the other side of the field.
Yeah, they Madden right clicks the stick in.
Right. And so though Philadelphia knew that KC had their number, they kept running the same thing without an adjustment. So to me, when I think about Kansas City and what I want in fantasy, it's Mahomes and Kelce. But after that, I don't want anybody because I don't believe that I can consistently use anyone. McKinnon, I think Shane was saying earlier, round 11, round 12, like, sure, as a bench guy, I get it. I like it too, because he will win you weeks. But I think if you can figure out the best tendencies for Kansas City, if they're playing, like, for example, what I looked up was like teams that play a high percentage of man. Kadarius Toney, super effective against man defense.
Sure.
When teams play, when teams are playing man and they may have maybe not great safety play, MVS is your guy. So, sure. Like, I think getting utility out of the Kansas City Chiefs in any sort of fantasy sense this year will come in DFS. And I think it will come based on scheme because just like in the Super Bowl, just like in the Super Bowl, Kansas City will take exactly what you're giving to them and beat you.
Sure.
So what you need to do before every DFS section where you pick a Chiefs player, you have to have a cheeseburger and do your best Andy Reid impersonation and be like, okay, how do we beat this team? Who's the player we pick?
I saw an episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives the other day, and Andy Reid was on it, and it was so funny because
that rules.
He just kept telling Guy to shut up so he could enjoy his food. It was just hilarious because they were in Kansas City, and or Guy was in Kansas City, and they met up with him at some burger place, and Reed just destroyed like one of these burgers in like four bites. It was awesome.
What if you got to go though? Like you go from Philly sandwiches, and then you go to KC with barbecue. Like Andy Reid's living his best heart attack life.
Goddamn right. And I mean, he started as an assistant in Green Bay, so he knows the cheese too.
Yeah, great food places for him. But well, really quick, do you think there's going to be out of this, you know, slew of blah receivers, will there be a 1,000-yard receiver for Mahomes this year?
I mean, not unless you're Travis Kelce.
We all know Travis is going to get his 1,000 yards.
I think that room got worse, right? Like, it's even harder to predict. Or at least last year, you had like the name recognition of Juju playing out of the slot. I'm like, okay, like he's good for 700, 800 yards, which I think he got like 935 or something like that.
Yeah,
where
it was like close to 1,000.
Where this year is just like spin the wheel, hope for the best. And I don't want to play that game at those positions and ADPs. If someone wants Pacheco in the 7th, someone wants MBS in the 9th, you can have them.
I don't want any of these guys at all. And furthermore, I'm going to go on record right now. Remember this. I don't think a single Kansas City wide receiver breaks 650 yards receiving this year.
Whoa, I'll take that breakfast bet.
Bring it on. Bring it on. I'll see you in February.
I'll take that over.
See, right. Last year I drafted Sky Moore at 108. Big fucking mistake in rookie drafts. Yeah. In the rookie draft we're in right now, someone just took Rashi Rice at 110. Big fucking mistake, bro. Yep. Just learn from my mistake. And we're saying it right now in episode 86. Don't spend high draft capital on Kansas City wide receivers. Don't take the bait.
Nope. I have some funny Sky Moore stuff. He didn't do enough to even be ranked on the ranking thing that I was looking at.
God, that sucks.
But here's my favorite Sky Moore stat. Last year, he had one game where he was wide receiver 33. But most of his games, he was like wide receiver 85 up to like in the hundreds. All right. But Sky Moore had two top 10 finishes. He was wide receiver 7 in the conference championship week, and he was wide receiver 4 in the Super Bowl.
That's true.
So if nuclear annihilation wipes out 30 of the 32 NFL teams, Sky Moore might be deserving of a bench spot on your roster.
But you should buy him from me in Dynasty.
He's great in Dynasty. If you're in a league with Shane,
a late second is all I'm asking. Just re-roll.
All right. Anything else before we end this one here?
No, I don't think so. We all know Kansas City is going to be a contender this year.
Better real
any,
life.
Any
team.
Predictions on Kansas City? I'm calling Kansas City is going to make it to the Super Bowl. Who do you think's going to be their contender?
My team, the Philadelphia Eagles. Hey, look, we're matching.
Kansas City and Philly again, huh?
Rolling back.
Actually, I have Philly and Cincy.
Joe really? Cool, can't be Joe Cool.
I already made the bet on FanDuel.
So then it's Chiefs and Bengals in the AFC Championship?
Correct.
Who's the coach of the Bengals?
Or you got the Bills and Cincy?
Zach Taylor, a.k.a. Matt Nagy with a good offense.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about that too. I was like, Zach Taylor's significantly brought up by his offensive weapons. There's no way his coaching scheme is the reason why that team wins games.
Correct. All right, so let's end here, and then we will hop to the next episode here in a second, and we'll do the Philadelphia Eagles and the Seattle Seahawks. So we'll see you soon. Goodbye.